This is the Half Hour Podcast, released August 13th, 2023, episode 642, Sad Violins for Superconductors.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
Coming in hot and live. You just sounded loud there.
It was
like you leaned into the mic, I think.
As I get older.
Right.
You know, I've got dad voice now. That's what it really is.
Shouting into the void more, yes.
Oh, man. Yes. My buddies, when they used to call my house... My dad took after my grandfather, who really both have booming voices. I'm sure I'm also destined to have a booming voice. But like, you know, when you used to call a house phone.
Oh, yeah, right. And if you called long distance, you'd speak louder.
Oh, well, there's that piece. No, that's actually, yes, yeah. there's definitely that. No, this was, it was like, I don't know if kids these days, but right. It was like someone had to go and get that person. And in the Gamble household, I love my dad greatly, but he would just shout your name.
Yeah.
and then, you know, you're expected to go pick up the receiver and, you know, start talking. And so one of my friends still, to this day, every time I see him, he asks how my dad's doing. And then he goes, Christopher.
Yeah. Because right.
That's like his number one memory of my dad, like shouting, you know,
yeah.
My buddy would call the house and then my dad would shout, Christopher.
So that's great. So was your phone in the hallway?
We had one in the kitchen. There was one in my parents' bedroom upstairs, and I think
what?
That was it.
You had multiple phone lines.
Well, I'm younger than you, Dave.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah.
The kitchen was the main one, but it was a pretty small house.
Well, I eventually did have multiple phone lines. Yeah, they eventually got sick of me. Like they were trying to use the phone, and I'm on the modem. You know, yeah, so it would like, yeah, they'd pick up the phone and, you know.
Okay, so here's a question for you, since we're on the modem thing. I watched a rom-com, an old rom-com the other day with my wife, and we were watching You Got Mail, which is a riot, which is now 25 years old, and it's a riot. It's like a
absolutely.
It's like an advertisement for American Online and Starbucks and just like being a yuppie, basically. And so my wife, though, she asked me, did it always make the noise when you like logged on? Because one of the things, you know, even featured in the movie is like the modem noise, you know, like the 14.4K modem or whatever,
those Hayes modem sounds.
Yeah,
it did. Well, back when you
was
used
it
to
always
actually have
audible to the user, though, like even like in the
no
the latter
that
days
was
of
optional
modems.
that okay. was optional, so
I couldn't
know,
remember
it
was yeah.
Well, it yeah it depends on like back in the old days when you had to flip the switches on the Hayes modem. Right,
no,
Hayes
okay,
was the brand. Was the brand name? Hayes was like the Xerox of modems back then.
Yeah.
You know, it's where back when you had to flick the switches, you would have an online originate switch or whatever. So and it'd have a little speaker in it so that you could hear it, so that you could, you know, because the whole point was that you needed to be able to hear
it.
That the you needed to monitor that the other end was actually a modem attached to it. And if you didn't have the speaker, you just wouldn't know.
Right. And you're not getting someone picking up and being like, hello, hello.
Exactly. Hello.
This is a phone line. Please don't play those noises in my ear.
Yeah. So you needed that. But then when you connected to an ISP, you know, it was different back in the BBS days and stuff like that.
Yeah. So like point to point kind of.
Yeah. Once you had an ISP, it was like, eh. But I can still remember it. Even my ADSL 2 Plus could still, like they'd have a little tiny speaker in. I think you could hear it actually negotiating the.
Yeah, I mean, in the movie and then in like in my memory, I mean, like I could still pretty much sing the intro. You know, I know the words to that tune, but I couldn't remember if they played it through the speaker. I mean, they very obviously played it through the speakers in the movie to like move the plot point, I guess, as much as that's worth.
Yeah, of course. I think the, you know, You've Got Mail, see, because I never had the America Online thing,
so
right? Because it wasn't
so
a thing
bad.
Here, right?
Oh, really?
No, that was, hence the name, America Online, right? I'm not in America. Right?
Wait, you're not?
That was not a thing here, right? I can't. Oh, what was my?
Wait. So, what was like the latter? What were the latter days of like? Wait, does that? How the hell did people communicate across the ocean?
Well, my first online internet thing after modems, of course, after BBSs and stuff like that, was Microsoft Network. They had their own network. This is before the internet as kind of, well, the internet existed, but companies were going for their own internet.
The World Wide Web and the...
And they touted that, oh, you could actually share mail with the internet, right? So with people on the internet, you could. So, yeah, I actually got the Microsoft Network, it was called, because it came with Windows 95. Would have came with Windows 95, and I was using the Microsoft Network.
Almost 30 years ago, Dave.
Yeah.
Approaching 30 years ago. Speaking of approaching 30 years ago, today is our 13-year anniversary.
Oh, is it? Really? I didn't know there was a day.
It's August 10th here. I think it was August 10th that we recorded.
Okay, it's August 11th.
Yeah, August 10th in my head is...
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so we're releasing this later. But yeah, 13 years.
13 wow. Years. Yeah, because we started it not long after I had... I must be 13 and a half years on the blog now. Is it 14 and a bit?
I think it's 14. I started
in 2009. I started April 2009.
Oh, then that would be 18 months. Really?
Right.
We started August 2010. I know that.
Oh, okay. Right. So it's a year.
I thought you were like 6 months prior, but maybe you were more than that.
No. It seemed like that, but no, it's actually more. So,
Okay. Well, the 13th anniversary is lace as the...
Lace, really? Is that a...
You know, like each
thing,
of the years.
Diamond jubilee, a diamond, you know, wedding.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I was hoping copper. Yeah, copper is...
Copper would have... Is copper one of them? Is copper a...
Wool or copper? Yep. Seventh anniversary.
Oh, seventh, is it? Wool or copper?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, there you go.
Wool or copper.
Yeah. Wow. Jeez.
Yeah, they start getting weird too. There's some weird ones. Copper comes back on 49th anniversary.
Oh, there you go. Oh. Right. Will we still be doing it? Will podcasts still be a thing?
I don't think so. No. I don't think they will be for me. How about that?
Right. No, 13, I'll
so
be
like what's that? Yeah. 36 years from now? Sorry.
Yeah,
buddy.
I think I'm going
to be retired from you at least.
Yeah, I'll probably
we'll
be
talk
6 feet
once a
under
year.
Under
how about that? I'm going to live to 150. Come on.
You
never know.
Modern tech, you know, never know. Mm. You want to know what else is having an anniversary this month, actually?
What's that?
I just tweeted last night. The Fluke 87. The Fluke 87. Oh. Guess how old the Fluke 87 is.
Let's see. I bet that came out in the early 90s at the earliest. I would say mid 80s. So if it was 83, it'd be 40 years.
Not quite. 35 years. Came out in 1988, August 1988. According to the manual, anyway. So, but Fluke retweeted me, so Fluke didn't question that. So,
didn't. All right.
So, yeah, 35 years. Yeah.
Wow.
35 years for the same, essentially the same model of multimeter. You can still buy it as the Fluke 87.5.
Some executive somewhere should be getting a bonus for all of the amortized R&D on that thing.
Yeah, that's nuts. I mean, they've changed the design. They switched from a Fluke proprietary processor to an MSP 430.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Yeah, I think that came in the Mark III. Don't quote me on that, because there was no Mark II. That was very interesting. There was no Mark II. I don't think there was. I think they went from the 87 to the 87 Model 3. It isn't Mark, it's Model. The 87 Model 3. I don't think there was ever an 80 series Model 2. Please correct me if I'm wrong, anyone, in the comments down below. But, yep. Yeah, there was no Model 2. And, interestingly, there was a Model 4. But, I don't know if you know this, but it was so radically different. Right? The Model 4 was so radically different. You can Google a picture of the Fluke Model 4, right? And you'll find it. Maybe. It was so radically different. Everyone went, well, this is no longer a Fluke 87. Screw you. I'm not buying it. So they very quickly rebranded it as the Fluke 187. So now you can't buy it anymore. But then it was reasonably successful as the Fluke 187. So...
Was it 87 because that's when it was created? Is that why it was the Fluke 87?
No, it was the Fluke 80 series, probably because it was the 1980s. I don't know.
It was released in 88. Yeah. I mean, it was released in 88, but it probably started in 87. And you know how projects go.
Yeah, so. But it's not just the 87. It's there was the 83, the 85, and the 87. There were three models in that series.
I don't know any of these things, Dave. I've never had an 87.
Yeah, you see, because you're not a multimeter aficionado. Like,
I'm not.
No, you
no,
just...
I have literally what's given to me.
What multimeter do you use?
I use a 121 GW and you know, a questionable quality and construction, but you know, it was free.
Yeah, it gets the job done. Yeah, it's free. Yeah.
I have a Keithley 2000, which was also free.
Bench meter. Yeah.
I have one of those Anang 80.
Oh yeah, yeah.
One of those little ones that you recommended.
Yep. Yeah, the 8008. Yep.
Yeah, that's the
or
one.
Or some variant. There's, you know, 20 variants.
I'm not very good at electronics, Dave. I don't know if you know this.
you're not really a hobbyist. You're not as much of a hobbyist.
I'm not. I don't know. I'm definitely not a gearhead.
Than other. No, you're not really a. Yeah, no. You're more of a.
I'm the practical engineer.
You're a corporate engineer. Corporate engineer.
Well, that's a little bit of a stretch,
not,
but okay.
Not quite, yeah, because you have a podcast and you teach it. And, you know, like, so you've got more passion than your regular corporate engineer.
I'm not a hobbyist. I 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
I did not get started like that. I'm not, you know, I'm not doing this for funsies all the time, you know, like.
Yep.
I'd like to think that if I won the lottery, I'd still do electronics, but I'm honest. I don't think so.
You may not. Whereas, like hardcore guys like me will just still be doing
this. I don't know if you would have any choice. I think your brain is broken.
Right.
In a nice way.
That's fine. I think every electronics hobbyist will take that as a compliment.
A little bit broken, but in the right way.
It's all good.
Yeah. I'd like to think that I would, but I'm pretty honest with myself.
Right.
Yeah, I'd probably get tied up in other things.
Right.
But what are you using every day, though? Are you using the 87 every day?
One that's in the nearest reach. No, I'm not using the Fluke 87. It's hanging around the lab, and I might use it very occasionally. But no, I'm either using one of my own branded BM 786s or my 235 or the 121 GW, whichever one happens to be within reach.
Yeah.
So
that's... Yep. That is a good synopsis of mine as well. It's just the ones that are in reach are mostly the ones given to me. So
right.
That's the thing. I think if I had like a special need, which I don't, I mean, like even the 5.5 digit, I'm not using all the digits on there. So
yeah.
And I don't care, you know, like the 10 volt folks, the reference aficionados, whatever you call them. Yeah. I'm not that. So, and nor will I ever be. I know that I'll
volt nuts.
The volt nuts. Yeah. I will never be a volt nut. I think.
Yep.
Even if I was offered the lottery amounts of money, I'm not sure I could be a volt nut because I don't care that much.
You just don't care. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I just don't.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, you know, there's many better engineers than me in many ways. So, yeah. I did like your question to Toby. That was a good question. I listened to that whole interview.
Yeah.
Fascinating interview.
What
Toby
question?
Toby was great.
Yes, Toby was great.
About the DM, what DMM they have on their hip.
Oh, right. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a good question. Yep.
Yes.
I recommend people listen to that show if they have not. So.
Oh, you have to listen to find out which one a linesman uses.
That's right. That's right.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. But cool. There's much debate. There's a very lively, Bryman thread going on the EEV blog forum at the moment. And everyone's talking about, which one's the most suitable for field use. Ah, it's too big. I can't physically use the BM869 in my hand. It's just too big. And, you know, so everyone's like complaining.
Just imagining a bunch of adults, you know, on the
internet. Oh, yeah. Shouting, this is serious
this
shit.
This BM is too big. This BM is
no,
too
it's
big.
Too big. This one uses polycarbonate and this one uses polyethylene housing.
Oh, my God.
You should see the debate about polycarbonate versus polyethylene. Holy crap.
You know, I shan't. I shan't, Dave.
It's great.
Yeah.
Nerds,
I'm glad they found something they like. And people to argue with. How would they have done this in the era when there wasn't America Online connecting people to Australia? I mean, you know, you and I wouldn't have
been. I'm actually going to be given a talk on this.
Oh, really?
It won't be recorded, so sorry, you've got to turn up in person, but I've been invited to a university, which shall remain nameless at the moment, just in case people try to gatecrash it. in September, and they want me to give a talk about how I got into electronics and all that sort of stuff, and I was going to share all that sort of stuff. Like, this is before the internet, okay?
Here's the thing, Dave.
What?
I will pay you $500 if you show up in full regalia, like you're going to a graduation, and then when you walk in, you play Pomp and Circumstance.
What's Pomp and Circumstance?
Na, 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 na,
oh, right, okay, right, yeah. Yeah.
And then you, like, go in and you lecture, like, in very, like
right,
loud
in regal robes. Like,
yeah, exactly. Basically, like, you're an academic king. I would like
that.
Oh,
I could dress like Bob Pease as a czar. You know,
that's not
like,
bad too.
Have you seen his?
Not getting my $500 for that. Yes, I have seen that.
yes, his Zara.
You don't have
costume.
The beard for it though. That's the thing. You'd have to put on.
Yeah,
a beard.
I know. I'd have to put on the fake beard. Yeah. Yeah. Damn it.
Darn.
Anyway, yep.
That's exciting. And it's just about like getting started.
Getting started. And
I guess you're not going to the U.S. for this university visit.
No. It's in town. So you know.
There you
Sydney.
Go. Somewhere in Sydney. Check out the universities in Sydney sometime in September, folks. You might find Dave there.
You might indeed. Yeah. And I'll be getting an exciting tour of something. I won't spoil it, but yeah.
I'm guessing particle accelerator. That's what I'm guessing.
Right. I've already done a particle accelerator.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe, there's always more. There's always more particles to accelerate. Maybe there's a muon detector or some kind of particulate detector. They think that's always very exciting. Right. And then you're like, oh, look, a bunch of stuff I can't see.
I mean,
it is exciting.
Or it's an LK99 superconductor, dude.
Oh, someone asked if that was going to come up on the show. I don't have the stones for it, Dave. Nor do I have the background in research. I don't get it. I don't really care about it. I read a little bit about it, and I'm like, oh, okay. Do you have something that you'd like to say about it?
Well, what would you like me to say? I've already done a video. Like, people expected me to do a debunking video of superconductor physics.
No. I can't deal with this science right now. There's someone in the Netherlands talking about solar panels in a roadway again. I gotta go. Screw you, science. There's some idiots over here.
I mean, like, as if people expected me to know and debunk superconductor physics. Like, you know, come on, seriously? I saw an incredibly stupid, the stupidest video I've ever seen on the company's website.
The hottest of hot takes.
So I did a video laughing at their stupid video. And sure enough, their website's now closed. And it's, you know, so I don't know what's going on there. But whether or not it reopens, whether or not that video will be back. And nobody disagreed with me. Everyone thought that was a stupid video. But there were a lot of people defending it. Like, as in a lot of people saying, oh, the video doesn't matter. Oh, the marketing team made it. Oh, the scientists were under duress. They had to make it under pressure from marketing. And it's an old video. It's not real. I don't know, blah, blah, blah.
I don't know what we're talking about here. Are we talking about?
What? Oh, you have not seen my LK99 video?
No.
Oh, okay.
Something
right.
to watch afterwards. Okay. All right.
Well, I'll explain it
to
you briefly.
It's more about the video than it is about the...
Oh, yeah. It's a video that the company... Like, this is... The LK99 is developed by a commercial of a university, right? So they have a commercial website, right?
Like
and they're trying to promote this material.
Yeah,
it's
like
an innovation lab or something like that. Right. Something like that, right? They're trying to sell... They try to patent and sell the technology. And every university in the world has one of these commercial arms.
That's right. That's right.
It's
To varying success, yes. That's...
Exactly.
Some of them really not do well.
Well, I've done another debunking video about another university commercial lab, which we can go into if you want. But anyway, this LK99, right? So they've got a commercial website, and the only promotional video on their website, it's front and center on the main page, is they use this copper plate, right? It's like a coin, right? It's like, you know, it's round shaped like a coin, and it's hanging by a piece of string. And they coated it with their magic LK99 material, right? So they're thermally deposited on there, and they put a magnet near it, and the copper plate moves. Yeah, that's called Lenz's law. It's going to do that. And I did a demo demonstrating that it's going to do that. It's Lenz's law, right? You put a moving magnet near a copper thing, it's going to induce a current in the copper, which then back induces and actually repels the...
The eddy currents? Is that the one?
Yeah, and it actually repels the magnet. So it's it's the dumbest thing ever. It's the dumbest thing. So I did a video laughing at that, and everyone thought I was doing a debunking video, debunking the physics of the semiconductor, of the superconductor material. It's like, no. Anyway, yeah, that's what I, yeah. So that was just the dumbest thing.
Can you explain to me what it actually, okay, so then there, that's that thing.
Yeah.
I don't get, I didn't pay attention and like, so I was on holiday, I think, when all this
because
stuff
you're not on Twitter anymore. That's the problem, dude. Everything's on Twitter. Dude, everything's on Twitter. Nothing's on Mastodon. Mastodon's just
nothing's I agree. That has fallen off. It's still good. It's not. I'm just not doing anything though, and I think that's. I'm no poorer for it. I'll tell you that much. maybe
well, you are. You haven't been kept up to date with all the.
I missed out on a lot of hot takes. I mean,
you missed all the memes as well. You missed all the best meme, the best LK99 memes.
I will give you that. I missed out on the memes, and for that, I am forever heartbroken. Insert set, editor, insert sad music here.
Yes, please.
I'm so sad. I can't even think.
Violin, like one of those, you know, the violin. Yeah, yeah, violin music, please. Yep. For those who don't know, we do have an editor now who edits the show.
Yeah,
for
well, we
us,
don't so. Expect her to do this. I mean, no, that's right. A better job description. Yeah, I do like that idea of just like calling out into the deep of like, editor, please.
Yep.
Line.
Anyway, so what don't you get about LK99? What have you got, or what have you missed?
So here's what I saw there was some stuff about it. Like LK99 has been around for a while. Now they're starting to do some experimental stuff. Some of it looked kind of shoddy. The videos that I saw, whatever. I don't really care about that. What is the actual breakthrough of having a superconductor? So then what does that enable practically? Like so say there was a room temperature superconductor.
Yeah. Yep.
I didn't even look that far. What does that enable day to day?
Zero power loss for starters, zero transmission loss. Right? Zero transformer losses if you can build it into a wire that you can wind on a transformer, right? Zero transformer losses, zero power losses. Quantum computers, apparently, it's got a big use in quantum computers. You wouldn't have to cool them down. So apparently, and that would be like a game changer or something.
Okay, so the quantum thing, that's way beyond my comprehension. But I feel like I was actually watching your video about the trace rating, current rating. That was a good video. And like, I understand that. I feel like in DC power transfer and like the resistance of, you know, like at least using calculators and that sort of thing. And like, okay, but are you saying to me then, so like, how about that? We could talk about that in that context of that thing, right? So you had someone who on Twitter asked if you had 70 or 80 amps that you needed to pass through a trace on a board, that there would be, you know, there's some temperature rise and some there's a bunch of formulas around that. And you can use calculators like you did to do the engineering of how big the trace needs to be.
Yes.
Are there practical, like, if it was a true superconductor, that means there would be no self-heating.
There would be zero.
So that means we would be able to squeeze 1,000 amps of current through a 10 mil trace. Like some of it just doesn't, it breaks my brain, right?
I mean, that I don't actually know. Like, could you like put all of the power for a city through a hair's width thing, right? Yeah, I think there are still limits.
Right, exactly. Does it just start to break physics at a certain point?
Yeah, I think there are still limits there somehow.
Yeah, so like the practical limits.
I could not tell you. Yeah, I could not. And I don't think maybe anyone could tell you until we actually have a... Well, no, because they could already test that. Presumably, they could already... Because you can get superconductors that have literally zero resistance, right?
Right, but you have to like chill them down to like, right, but you have to be like down at zero Kelvin or closest to it as you can. And then like,
that's an interesting question. Has anyone passed like 10,000 amps through a hair's width superconductor?
Right, exactly. Right.
Yeah,
right.
I don't know.
And often they're doing it because of other, I feel like when they're using superconductors, so I was thinking about like the magnetic levitation thing, right? So they always use that in examples, right? So you have like super cold things, and that's a superconductor.
That's the Meissner effect. Yes.
What is the effect called? Oh, I didn't know.
It's called the Meissner effect. Don't ask me to spell it. M-E-I-S-S something.
Yeah. Okay.
Just put in Meissner effect.
Yeah. I always think of that as like when I think of superconductors, I think of that. I think of, like you said, they're always talking about it for quantum. I honestly don't get how quantum computers work in the slightest. You know, I'm just like, okay. Well,
right. Yeah. Same
there's
here.
Another
yeah,
couple exactly. states of, you know, it's not on and off. It's on and off, sideways, left ways, up ways, diagonal right. ways. You know, it's a Willy, it's the Willy Wonka Vader of computing, right? I'm like, okay, cool.
I have done videos on that, of course.
I just don't
we can link
get
in.
It.
It's hard to wrap your head around. Yeah.
I also don't get how it's going to be practical. Like, so are they going to recompile the computer programs for this, like, 8 bits of... my brain needs a practical example, and I don't feel like we're there. I know they exist, but, like,
no, look, the thing with quantum computers is that they're not general purpose computers. You can't use them as general purpose, structured flow code computers. So they're not there yet.
So as we start to talk about, like, a superconductor, right, wherever that, there's obviously some threshold there, but, like, it doesn't break physics. It's like a special characteristic of a material that takes it into that enables some kind of nonlinear jump in characteristics, but it's not removing physics entirely. So I don't understand
no,
that.
No, no. It's I know. I can appreciate. Yeah. Can you put 1,000,000 amps? I've gone from 1,000 to 10,000. Now I'm going to 1,000,000.
Why not?
Right? Why not? Right? 1,000,000 amps, right? Through the size of a, hair.
Right.
Size.
Can I pass 1,000,000 amps from point A to point B and then put it through a 10K resistor?
Ohm's law's not going to break, dude. But it's just... Anyway, the two major things that everyone touts from is transport. Of course, we could have trains that just no friction, well, except for air friction. But we could have trains and buses, and we can have hoverboards eventually.
Hoverboards, bring it. Yeah, all right.
And the other one thing is zero resistance
with stripey things on them by Mattel, right?
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. But you are right. I've never actually, I always hear it touted as, zero resistance, right? That is the thing. And zero power loss transmission. Yeah, but I've never, I've got,
Well, resistance is a construct anyways, right? I mean,
I don't think I've ever investigated.
Yeah. Anyways, I just feel and so right now it feels like there's also so if you wanted to do levitation, right, you get someone who's like, I'm going to change transportation for the better and everything's going to levitate and we're going to have maglev trains everywhere. And maglev does that.
Hyperloop.
Right. Well, I mean, right. I mean, but there are some practical energy inputs, right? So you can make superconductors. You can have magnetic levitation as it is currently, right? You can have lower resistance bearings and things like that. But there's an energy cost there, and I'm guessing that superconductors would start to reduce that energy cost and maybe make it more practical. But there's
they
still
would make
gonna
it more
be
practical. Yeah.
Yeah, there's still going to be an energy cost, and so I guess
there's still going to be energy, but it reduces by orders of magnitude.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
So what are
the
those
current
orders,
problem
right?
yeah. with the yeah. maglev trains at the moment? I've been on a maglev at 430 kilometers an hour. It's fantastic.
Ooh,
right?
That's cool. Yeah.
It's fast.
I've always
especially
wanted to.
When they pass each other. They pass each other by one's going to 430, one's going to 430. It's fantastic, right? Yeah. Absolutely fantastic mode.
They actually multiply to 16,000.
Yeah. Something. But it's just the problem with the maglev trains is that massive power consumption required. They don't make a profit because they have to pay so much in power to keep the thing going.
Right.
So
right.
yeah, so that is that, so that's why they're not really practical. You can make them, but they don't really pay for themselves. So which is a kind of a non-starter. Mm. But superconductors would mean that they would work, and you'd be able to build them everywhere, and it'd be a complete no-brainer. You wouldn't build regular trains anymore, really.
You still wouldn't be able to build them in the U.S. because apparently the U.S. hates trains.
No, right, yeah, of course.
Because we are incapable
I know, you're a train
of
phobic.
Running
yeah,
train.
Yeah.
Oh my god. You know, I watch train channels with my daughter. She loves trains. And like, I'm like, and look, you know, we're watching like, first off, it's amazing. There's like these channels that are just, it's just people. It's actually just one guy that just records trains, and he must be rich because like each video's got like 18 million views on it. And it's just like, you know, you know, it's just this guy's hobby. And, you know, I'm talking to my daughter. I'm like, oh, look, a steam train. That's still about as fast as you can go on a train in the U.S. Plodding along.
I mean, there's a lot of infrastructure Japan, problems. You know, it's 400 k's an hour.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's crazy. The China trains are super fast. Yeah. Super fast.
Yeah.
It's a darn shame because I love trains too. And the fastest train in the U.S. is way slow compared to China and Japan.
I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah, it's sad.
Not great.
Yeah, and it's really expensive too. Like, I asked a friend who's in New York currently and going up to Boston. I was like, "Oh, you're gonna take the Acela Express?" He's like, "It is so much cheaper to take a flight. It's unfortunate."
Right? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, because I want to go out to Siding Springs Observatory, which is out near Dubbo, and I'm thinking about taking the train. About taking the train from Sydney.
You guys have
to,
nice trains,
you know. It's slow. It takes 6 hours to get there. But by the time I get to, you know, and the flight's like an hour hour and 20 minutes or something. But by the time I, you know, get to the take the train to the airport and then wait, you know, you got to get there early and then you got to, like, it'd probably take me almost that anyway. So
eat a $30 sandwich. You don't forget that.
Yeah, exactly. And I can get a train for $60, first class, $60 to Dubbo.
I did that to DC from here because I live pretty close to a train stop.
Right.
And it was a 7 hour trip. I mean, like, it was not short.
Okay.
It would have been
a
4 hour drive or a 1 hour flight minus the airport stuff. But, you know, I wasn't stressed at all.
But you can do things on the train. You can.
Yeah, I wasn't stressed. I was just working all day.
You can just sit there. So you can sit there for 6 hours and put the headphones on and just chill, you know.
Ignore the crap out of other people. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
That's what I really want to do, is not be near other people, and I want to ignore everyone. That's what I'm...
Right, yes.
Yeah. Bring it on.
Unsocial nerd.
Exactly. Yep.
Anyway, so I think I'll take the train, damn it.
I think you should. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I love trains.
Sounds good.
Man, I wish the trains are better in the US. Oh, well.
Anyway. All right. I've got a few train videos on my channel, on my second channel.
No. Do they have millions of views?
No, unfortunately not.
You know what? I'll get my daughter's take on them.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. All right. I've got one with a steam train on a big turntable, and they're pushing the steam. You know, I've got.
I've seen that one. Yeah, yeah. I've seen. Right. What you really need, given her age and her ability to concentrate on things, is like the train to change about every 20 seconds so that she can also
shout.
She needs to shout choo-choo to really stay engaged.
Choo-choo. Yes. Right.
And don't you know it, Dave, I am also shouting choo-choo. So,
of course.
My behavior reverts.
Anyway, there you go. All right. That's enough of trains, enough of the LK99 material, and everyone's waiting for my apology.
Well, I apologize.
Everyone's waiting for it. The comments, because a day or two later, here we go, we're going to keep going on LK. A day or two later, like, everyone, like, it's all over Twitter. Oh, somebody's confirmed it. Oh, somebody's going to, this lab here's confirmed. Oh, this lab's here's confirmed. So my comments got filled with, Dave's going to have to apologize. This is the most embarrassing video ever. The credibility of your channel's ruined. You know,
On. There was never any credibility in the first place. Let's be honest.
Exactly.
Yeah. Speaking of your channel, so I mentioned that current monitoring thing. The current carrying.
Yes.
But I like that. I've been back in layout land, Dave. This has been about 6 months for me.
Excellent.
Before.
It's probably the same for me. Yeah, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, it's been a long time since I've done the board.
Yeah. I'm just about ready to buy the board and. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the thing. When I'm out of practice, though, everything gets slower, you know, like when I'm like coming back to it, you know?
Oh, totally. Totally. If you're not the swing of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to build those muscles again.
Mm.
I need to build some stupid stuff. That's what I need to do. This is a work thing, so this is not stupid, but I need to build stupid things quickly. Mm-hmm. So if you have any ideas.
But, build stupid things. Oh, you want ideas for stupid things.
I do. You got some ideas?
Oh, God, no, because my ideas are never stupid.
Oh, well.
I'm not falling for that.
All right. Well, I have stupid ideas all the time. How about that?
Okay, great. No one's surprised.
Well, great.
I'm going to rub it in. You just went right into that.
I've already said on this show, this specific episode, that I'm not a good engineer. I don't care about a lot of electronics. I don't know how superconductors work. I don't care how quantum computers work. And now I'm saying I'm out of practice on circuit boards. But you know what? I'm back into it. So you don't have to worry about me.
Awesome.
Feeling that energy.
But I thought that was your job. I thought your job was like making like demo doodads.
Yeah, demo doodads for sure. But like, it's been a lot of plugging stuff together and then writing firmware. Right. I've been doing a lot of firmware in my work and other stuff, training and things like that. But I don't know. It's expensive to make custom hardware, and I do a lot of like modular kind of hardware.
It's expensive to make custom hardware. We've never lived in a better age for making custom hardware. You can get your PCBs for a dollar and you get 3D printed cases for next to nothing, can't you? It's never been cheaper.
That is true. Yeah, it has never been cheaper, but it's still expensive. And time expensive. This is a conversation I had with a coworker today about like, so we were watching a YouTube channel where someone was talking about like having their own pick and place. And my coworker rightfully pointed out that you can do a lot of turns with this sort of thing. And I said, this is something that you and I have discussed on the show a lot. And just like that.
Yes. Countless times.
So like I think the time cost of the person who has the pick and place is almost never put into it, but that is almost always the most expensive thing. And
totally. Yeah.
You know, and I think the real thing is like having a true need to build that custom hardware. And then if you do, then that's fine. Right. I mean, if you're building a ton of like customizable stuff, but if you're trying to make something like I am, I'm trying to make something that other people can build and like buy off the shelf. That's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's like building with Lego blocks then, and like hopefully widely available Lego blocks. And that changes a lot of the story. But now I'm designing my own Lego block. So that's the end of that story.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Well, speaking of widely available Lego blocks, the scooters in Seattle, the scooters, someone took them apart and they found a Raspberry Pi 4 in there.
I know. That's a good example of like, well, that's not a good example of what I'm doing, but that is a good example of someone who took off the shelf things, right? They weren't trying to make it reusable by other people, but I think if people knew what were inside spin scooters, they would have cracked those things open.
No, it was the easiest development. They were a startup. They needed to show something. Stick a Raspberry Pi 4 in it. Why would I develop custom hardware? That's just dumb.
Totally. Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, especially I think with the scooters too, like you have pretty massive battery source. I mean, like the amount of compute, I have like 500 milliamp sleep current. Who cares? This thing is going to be dead in, 6 hours from some millennial riding it half a mile.
Exactly. It doesn't
their
really
next
matter.
Appointment, right? So like, it's just the real bulk is there for the ride.
It is not a power optimized solution.
Yeah. That's right. It doesn't need to be. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right.
Right.
I think the surprising thing to me there is just the bulk of the case that you need for that sort of thing. Like that is just, they kind of design these cases, they design the scooters and to have these large enclosures built into them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's apparently a lot of these abandoned scooters around, so you can go pick yourself up on Raspberry Pi 4.
Right. Yeah, because Spin was in Seattle, but then they left Seattle.
Okay, right.
So
where are they now?
They're where I live. I think this thing is like a lot of, if you go like town to town, I was surprised. I was in Chicago. I came back through Chicago. I was in Seattle, and then I went to Chicago. Then I came back to Durham, where I live. And you see basically the municipalities have like brought the hammer down on all of these different scooter companies, and they all have their own restrictions now. So like in Seattle, they're kind of like all over, but they only have so many companies available that are like, they have licenses to operate in the city. So it used to, when the Wild West starting of scooter days, it was like anybody would just go and drop off scooters and it'd be like, download our app. And then you could start riding the scooter. You just happen to find out of the corner. Okay. Well, now the cities were like, no, we will fine you if you don't have a business license. And they only give so many of those out. In Chicago, they make it so that you have to dock some of the scooters too. So like the actual physical dock
thing. You can't just abandon them. You can't just leave them anywhere.
Leave them on the sidewalk. Right. And then where I live, it's pandemonium. It's but there's only a couple a couple that show up here. So, and right. It's also like they geofence them too, so that like if you ride outside.
I was riding one in Canberra. They're a thing in Canberra. Canberra's littered with them. You've been to Canberra, our nation's capital here.
Yep.
And they're littered with these bloody. There's two major scooter companies there, and they just about like they do have like central kind of locations where they are, but you just see them abandoned everywhere, right? And people just leave. Like technically, you get like docked, like you have to pay a bit more, but you can actually leave it anywhere. But you don't, you know, they actually charge you a bit more if it's just left anywhere.
And
these things were geofenced, right? We're hiring this thing, and we're riding the thing around. It's only going like 15 k's an hour. I'm going, this is freaking nuts. Lame, right? Yeah. And then all of a sudden, we went to the other side of the street, 25 k's an hour. And then we went back to the other side of the road, 15 k's an hour. And then we realized it was geofenced. It was, it was geo-speed fenced.
Yeah, it was like,
right? So within a certain.
It was governed.
Yeah. It was electronically speed governed within a certain area. And we figured, okay, because it was all around the shops there and they limited them to 15 Ks. As soon as you got literally to the other side of the road, it would speed up. It'd allow you to go faster. It was great. So, anyway.
That's why you always ride on the fast side of the street, you know.
Yeah, right. anyway, they're like, I don't think any of them are going to succeed. Really, I mean, it's just like if you need one of these every day, you're going to buy your own, right? You're not going to be renting these. And they're really expensive, right? They're actually quite expensive, especially if you use it every day. Well, they are here. No, to rent them.
Oh, how much does it cost?
Oh, we were paying like $30 an hour or something. It was quite, or $30 a half hour or something. It was it was pretty expensive.
They're not meant as like touring vehicles. They're meant as like, I want to get across. It's basically, I feel like it's a comparison to like taking an Uber or a Lyft or whatever your local rideshare is.
It is, like, but if you're taking it every day to work or something, if it's a 10-minute ride, you would just buy your own. Like it'd work out cheaper in no time. Get an e-bike or an e-scooter, right?
Yeah.
Which are banned here. I actually do have an e-scooter and they're banned. I can't ride it outside. So, bloody state government.
What you should do is you should design a speaker to make like a put 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 put
put
noise, so that people like think it's a two-stroke motor, and then you're like, ha ha ha,
right.
No petrol required.
Petrol, yes, right, yes. Well, that's true. They've only banned e-scooters. They haven't banned petrol scooters, I don't think.
Right? Why would they?
Yeah, exactly. Because they're not really a thing. Yeah. But actually, I have seen the odd one around over the years. Somebody's converted a scooter into a petrol powered scooter. And you hear them coming a mile away.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Little two-stroke thing, Yep. Anyway, I think they're doomed to fail. Like, they're only like a tourist thing, and then it's like, meh. And just and then who comes around and charges the damn things up? Like, somebody's got to come around at night and recharge them. Like, there's no charging facilities at the little, hub you leave them at. There's no ability to charge them there. So somebody's going to come around with a van and put these things in a van and go charge them overnight and then bring them back the next morning so they're available for the punters.
Ute.
Or a ute. Yeah. So I don't get it. If anyone knows how they, is there, I assume there's a swarm of people just driving around at night.
We've talked about this on the show before. We've definitely talked about this on the show before. There was like the.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, the nighttime bird army or whatever they called them. Yeah, because it was like.
Oh, right. Yeah,
in the US.
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's it's like, what do they call that? The gig economy. It's like another gig economy.
Right. Okay. Yep. So students can make money by just go around and charging up these scooters at night.
The US, it's all types.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Maybe I should go work for that Amazon Prime, shipping thing. What's it called? You can sign up and you can become a courier driver for Amazon.
Different places, but. You like peeing in Gatorade bottles? Is that your thing? Is that
right? No. Well, you just pick it up. Like you drive your own car and you pick the stuff up from
you
the
still
depot.
Have to pee in Gatorade bottles. No. It's
Really?
Bezos.
Oh, okay. Right.
Bezos actually recommends. He requires it.
Oh, because they put the camera in your car to watch you and
you
stuff
sure
like that. So you have to
in the Gatorade bottles. Yeah,
make
right.
sure you're not. Yeah, right. So because we actually have one of those hubs in my Isthmus Park here. So we're,
I'm not sure the hourly rate would be would meet your standards.
No,
I'm
gonna, not.
I'm going to say it like that. Is that a a good way to say it?
There's a clickbait video. I became an Amazon delivery driver. You won't believe what I found out. Yes, yeah. As an Amazon delivery driver. Yeah, I'll do it for a day and then quit.
Very much a clickbait thing. Yeah.
Right. Oh boy. Yeah, I'm sure you have to sign an NDA and they'll sue your ass. You know. Mm. Yeah. If you actually reveal.
Speaking of things that sound like clickbait, but it was just a curiosity of my coworker and I. We were talking through parts today.
To parts?
Yeah. Like, what part does DigiKey have the most of?
Oh, okay. Right. Can you actually sort by the highest availability part?
Well, you'd have to go through each category. And I took a guess on resistors and capacitors, which might not actually be true.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. No, but it's got to be close.
It was. And then what was, I guess, the interesting thing that popped out of it. So if you go to capacitors and then you sort by the most, and you don't turn off Marketplace because the stupid friggin' Marketplace.
Oh, Marketplace
thing.
Is bullshit.
Hey, DigiKey, if you're listening, you know I love you. Marketplace is so dumb. Turn it off by default. Yeah. I hate it.
Yes, turn it off. It's a good service if you need it, but yeah, I want it off by default. There's a reason I go to DigiKey, damn it.
Make it a different color.
Exactly.
Make it a different color. So, interestingly, this was kind of interesting, right? I was like, okay, well, I want to see the most capacitors. And I was like, holy crap. There is a company that has like 180 million capacitors. Like they were just, you know, like 35
volts. So they claim.
Yeah, like 35 volt, 0805, like 0.1 microfarad capacitors. Yep. Like pretty much like right down the middle of what I would expected given our current technology track and stuff like that. And then that was the most thing. And I'm like, oh, and then I saw the same company over is Calchip, all the way down the thing. And then finally it struck me. I was like, this is Marketplace. We're looking at their friggin' factory right now. Like, this is not what I want to see. And like, okay, cool. But like, I said out loud, I was like, I think they may be using DigiKey as their warehouse, but it wasn't. It was just like, it's their warehouse. No. That's not useful to anyone. No. I love you, DigiKey.
No.
Fix your shit.
No. Exactly. There is a reason that us engineers go to DigiKey and Mouser and Farnells and the rest of it is because we get it. Like, we get... Like we're guaranteed to get.
I don't care what other people have. I want what you have. Yeah. I want
what
it
you have.
Next day. Yeah, exactly.
I want it next day, same day. I want it. Yeah, exactly.
I want a little baggy with a smiley face. You know, like
right.
They should put smiley faces on. Be nice.
Oh, totally. Yeah, they should put a smiley face sticker. Yeah. I agree. We won't even charge you for that marketing advice. Did you?
Exactly. Exactly.
Free. We give it to you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Anyways, the answer was I think one in the DigiKey factory, I think there was like 40 or 50 million caps was the top one. So
right.
Not super surprising, I got to say. And not exciting.
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah.
One thing you might be surprised about is why the 2N2222 transistor, how it got that number and why it got that number. Is it special or does it mean something?
Why is that, Dave? Please tell me.
Well, we can watch it. You can watch the video. Because diodes are one, right? Diodes are 1N, right?
One N.
And then transistors are 2N, right? So it needed to be the 2N. Anyway, there's a great video here by Datasheet Digest.
Because it has 2N, like NPN, is it because you have like a NPN, you have 2N?
No.
You know, like a diode would be something different. EN, right? So there's one N.
No, the letter N stands for registered device.
Oh.
The letter, to disappoint you. That makes no sense, but yeah, it's a random thing.
I mean, it's fine, but it would have been a nice thing because it would have been like 1P would be like a PNP transistor, or 2P would be a PNP, PNP transistor, right? I guess you wouldn't have 1P though, because then it would just be the other side of the diode.
and if it's C...
Oh, I can't get a 1N... 1N4148. Oh, have you tried the 1P 4N48?
You can get a one. You could get a C, which is an unregistered, unencapsulated chip device. So if you see like a 2C, if you see a 2C, it means that it's not packaged.
2C or not 2C?
2C, that is the question. So that means an unpackaged chip. So N basically means packaged, I guess. Then the 2-2 at the start of it means something. Sorry, I'm going to have to go through it. I don't remember the exact video. I'm trying to scroll through it here. But anyway, we'll link in the video. You can watch it. There's a reason that it's got the 2222 thing and the 2N at the start. The 2 means something. The N means something.
I think this is the Augusta guy.
Oh, they've actually linked it. Yeah, it isn't their video, I don't think. I think they've linked in someone's video.
I thought it's another podcast. There's no way anyone can make that exciting. But if they can, I mean, we're talking about it.
Anyway, it's a really interesting video. Go watch it. It explains.
Yes. Cyber City Circuits. That's what I was thinking.
Designators. And the, yep.
Yes, that's great. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool. Cyber City Circuits, is it? Okay, cool.
Yeah. I'm going to be suing them for stealing Chip Report TV. Oh God!
Yeah, because that worked out. So, and just imagine the damages you can claim in that. All that revenue that you could have gotten.
Tens of cents.
Tens of cents. Tens of cents in revenue.
Oh, so bad. This is already 1,000 times better. Yeah. Ooh, they do have on their May 21st episode. They talk about the reverse mount LEDs, the sun LED ones. Have you seen those? Remember I showed you my
reverse mount LEDs. There's
talked about that.
They've been around for a long time. They've been around since the 70s, dude. 80s.
I know. I don't. Okay, so new to me. Come on, man. You know, Dave, there's a lot of people listening who have not been around as long as you have. You may know this.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So we still have to talk about it. Yep. I hate to tell you. Anyways, I love these things because then I can make fancy cutouts in my circuit boards.
Oh yeah, you can do front panels and you can do all sorts of
using the beautiful glow of FR4.
Well, you could even put a hole there and you could have it shine through the hole, and then you can use the diffuse.
That's what I was talking about.
Decal.
That's what I was talking about.
But
yeah.
but you can also shine it through the FR4.
Ah, don't shine
it. But you can also you can remove the solder mask and you can have the FR4 actually light up.
Yeah, weren't you going to? You said you were going to make a video about this. I thought you did. No?
Probably. I don't know.
You got to do it. You want me to make it for you? I can do it.
So many videos.
EEV blog, guest host, Chris Gamble with all this free time.
Yeah. Join the club.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I'm ignoring my child right now to be here to explain how PCBs work for you.
So my wife complains every day that,
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Anyway, if we've got anything else on the list to round out the show.
This new, I don't know where this is going. So there's a new, relatively new announcement. The TSMC Bosch Infineon NXP. Oh, wait, no, that's not it. That's the wrong one. That's not what I wanted.
Oh, do we care about a bloody joint venture?
No, not that one. No. The one that's number 10 on the list here. I don't care about that one. The one that I do care about is Bosch, Infineon, Nordic, NXP, and Qualcomm together to do RISC-V. Yeah. So here's the thing I can't understand. First off, Nordic's already doing RISC-V. I'm sure all of them are doing something with RISC-V. Right?
They've got
postdocs.
So are they doing, like, because RISC-V, like, yeah, the core is like the instruction set is standardized, but outside of that, nothing else is standardized.
Got it. He got it, folks. He got it. I think.
Oh, I got it. Did I? I knew that's what it would be. Would be that they're making them more compatible.
Right? I'm saying we've got it wrong on the show many, many times that it was the instruction set. Remember when we first started talking about it, we're like, oh, there's this common open source processor. That was wrong. But the architecture. So what I'm wondering is if this is, you have to excuse my conspiracy theorists, but like, is this malicious? Is this like, we're doing this, we're the big boys in the room, and we're going to make sure that we all interoperate, but we're going to somehow keep out other people? Like, no offense, Qualcomm, but I don't think of you as the bastion of open sourciness. I know there are some open source things, but when I have to sign multiple NDAs in order to like get a data sheet or
it's not. Yeah, they're not exactly.
Buy a chip from you. Yeah, no.
They aren't exactly a shining light in the industry when it comes
to that. Exactly. So like that's where like my brain goes. And like, you know, I love all these companies, right? I've used all of the parts here. They all make great parts, fine. But like, what's really going on here? You know, it kind of feels
we
like...
We will say, we might find out that they all magically cost the same after this, right?
Is this announcement going to be in a lawsuit in about 10 years from now where they, the word fixing is involved? Like, I don't think so. I don't want to be that conspiracy, but like, you know, my brain doesn't go the most positive places. And like I said, I love all these companies. Like, I use
So what is the TLDR on this? What is, why are they doing it?
I don't know. I think it's because of, I think they're saying automotive. I think they're saying they're, maybe they're going to define something for the automotive. There, it seemed like there was...
Here we go. No, the company will be a single source to enable compatible RISC-V-based products, provide reference architectures, and help establish solutions widely in the industry.
Yeah, so that's the other thing, potentially. I think this is also them giving a halfway up middle finger to ARM, saying, ARM, you better lower those prices or else, you know, we've got this consortium over here. I think that might be it too. I think this might be a thing to be pushing down pricing from ARM because, you know, ARM, it's not, it doesn't look like a lot on paper, but when you add it all up and you look at like
You make a 10 million chips it matters.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Right. Yeah, a couple cents per chip or whatever, you know, they have licensing deals and stuff like that. So it could be that. Maybe it's a power play, whatever. I don't really know. I don't know what to get all this stuff, right? So like I have been using RISC-V parts now. They're cool. They're not that differentiated yet. That's the other thing. Like, so and the tooling, like the tooling that C and Laura came on the show to talk about, and like it's catching up, but at least like the GCC ports and stuff like that, like I don't know how visible this is going to be. Like, I don't know if, like, would you seek out a RISC-V part? Would you pay a premium for a RISC-V part right now?
No. Why would I pay a premium for it?
I don't know. Like, that's the thing. There's no, like, monetary incentive. Maybe in the other direction, maybe you'd pay less for a RISC-V part. And maybe, again, maybe that's what they're going for here. They're trying to, like...
I'm going to use, to choose a processor these days, I'm still going to use the same decisions I always have.
Oh, you're just going to buy a pick.
Which is... Yeah. Well, no, it's not the same decision.
Oh, come
is
on, that was a good joke.
What's most
that was a good joke, and
the...
you know it.
It was
that was a good joke.
Dated.
Come on,
it's
come
dated.
On. That was like three episodes ago, Dave. We talked about that.
Yeah, right.
Hey, you know, it's fine.
Sorry,
it's fine. But here's the thing. Okay, how about this? So if Microchip started putting, so like if the tools, you know, right? So you use MP LabX, right? You know, you're not writing assembly, right? You're writing C,
right? You're mostly
and. If the tool was there, right, and MP Lab was, it had some like interface layer, and then under the hood, PIX started using RISC-V for whatever reason, and that would be a big shift. Would you care? Like, I don't. That's what I really.
No,
wondering.
I wouldn't know. Exactly, wouldn't care. That's what I said. I'm still going to use the same requirements for picking a processor that I always have, and often it comes down to the actual product. Like, you know, because it might be a price-sensitive product. So, that rules out PIC. Well, it doesn't rule it out. But, you know, if I'm going for, like, ultra-low cost, right, it probably rules them out, right? I'm going for some, the 10-cent micro, right? I'm going for the 10-cent one instead of the 40-cent one, right? So it just rules it out. Or I'm doing it based on features that I need or power. You know, if it's a really ultra, ultra low power design, well, there's only a few on the market, right? So I might have to choose something that I wouldn't ordinarily choose. It's, you know, often it's, you know, not all projects can just use any processor brand, right? It often doesn't work like that, or at least I find it doesn't work like that for the stuff I want.
I think you would upset a lot of the, especially if you're working on bigger teams too, like the tooling is super integrated to the process. And if you're like, well, hey, firmware team, we're going to go pull the rug out from under you.
Oh yeah. No, if you're working at a large company that's used Motorola parts for 30 years,
exactly.
And you come
in and go,
oh, I'm going to use these, you know, RISC-V things, you know, like you're just going to get, yeah, no, you're just going to
well,
get
better show up
the
with the tooling and the guarantees.
Right.
Right. Yeah, so it's going to be really interesting. I think it's probably something to do with ARM. It's probably, you know, this is probably either to knock down ARM prices or to take on ARM directly. I don't know. We'll see how it plays out.
I got no idea either. Yeah.
I do think we're going to see more RISC-V parts at all these companies. That's not too surprising.
That's not a stretch. Yeah.
The only ones I had seen so far at least announced publicly, were the Nordic. The Nordic had some like co-processors that were RISC-V, but I bet we'll start to see some NXP parts and Infineon and Nordic, whatever, that like some of their banner level chips will probably start to trend that direction. So yeah, it's
right.
Strange new world here, Dave. So we'll see how that goes. Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. That was, yet another chip industry, not a merger thing, but a affiliate joint venture thing. It's like, meh.
That's good. That was a good, old man thing. You know, I could actually hear your gray beard growing, so which is great. You just got to say meh
right.
a thousand more times, and you'll be ready to dress up as Lazar for your thing.
Right. All right. Well, I think we're done, unless you've got a last minute shout out.
I haven't checked this subreddit in a long time. Oh. Mm. Yeah. Oh, Mike Engelhard. Mike Engelhard released QSPICE.
Yeah.
I tried to do it.
Oh,
and
really?
It's like you need Windows 11. And I'm like, I don't even have Windows 10.
So did he leave? So he's left,
yes.
Has he? And he's doing his own thing?
He had left.
I do recall vaguely a mention of it. Yeah.
Pushed out, maybe? I'm not sure. I don't know what the whole
details are. Or part of a restructure or something. Or
yeah.
So he started his own.
We had mentioned on the show that he had.
Yeah, I'm sure we've mentioned it, but yeah, like, is that his full time thing? Is that his like?
He was like doing it on his own. That was like the thing that he was talking about. We should probably catch up with him, but he had been posting on LinkedIn about this new type of spice that he was doing, whatever, and then he released it with there's a company that it was called SPQR. And now it's QSPICE, and it's released with, I forget who. It's Corvo.
Q-Spice.
There we go. QSPICE. Get it? QSPICE, Corvo.
Oh, Corvo. Who's Corvo?
Corvo is like, they do like, I always think of their near field chips. They do like ultrasonic.
So they make chips. Oh, it looks like they make like power transistors and RF
like
filters
RF switches,
and
yeah.
amplifiers and RF attenuators. And so they're an RF chip company. Oh,
yeah. They're
okay.
Pretty big. And like I said, I think of them for like ultra high frequency, like 6 gigahertz transmitters and stuff like that.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Like, you know, the thing that's inside the little air tag, you've seen those teardowns?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, right. They use those parts.
They can do like ultrasonic range finding and stuff like that. I think
gotcha.
That's Corvo. I think that's a Corvo chip in there.
Got it.
But yeah, they're like right on the edge of, I mean, they're RF, but. Power RF stuff. So, yeah.
Got it.
So,
I'm clicking
now. QSPICE. Yeah, this is a good day. It's a good day video.
Right, there it is.
Yeah. I was hoping there was going to be a Linux port. That was probably a stretch. And then I tried using Wine. And it's like, no, this doesn't work with Wine. So,
this is Windows only. Okay.
Yeah, it's a Windows platform.
Windows 11 or 64 bit edition of Windows 10. So, it doesn't even support 32 bit edition of Windows 10.
Yeah.
Well, not many people have that, so. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Cool bananas. Okay. Yeah. Excellent. But there's so many, like, online simulators these days, and they're all pretty good.
They're okay. I mean,
User interface point of view,
I 100% agree with that,
Yeah, it's a skill thing, right? If you're not using your simulator like every month or something, then you'll completely forget how to use the damn thing if you haven't used it for a year.
I was thinking also like the DMM thing, right? It's like the ones that are on, like I go to Falstad all the time just to like, so Falstad's the little JavaScript one that's like the nice visualization of current and stuff. Like most of the time that's like, if I just want to like see like a rising current and like, I'm not like putting in any kind of characteristics of, FETs
yep.
or
no,
op amps
no,
or whatever.
You just want to make sure that sanity check.
Or really, or even like just to show someone an idea, like that's great because then you can like send them a link and I just want to do that.
Right.
I don't want to say like go download LT Spice and do this and do this and do this.
No.
But
no,
if you want to like make a real simulation, you should use like LT Spice or P Spice or Q Spice.
Yeah, of course.
KiCad's got Spice now in it too, which is I have not tried to be honest.
All right.
And all right, well. There is that difference in tiers, but I am not doing QSPICE. Much like my DMM stuff today, if I'm gonna break another secret here. I don't need high end spice these days.
Right, no, no. I've never really needed it as such. You know, I've used it, but as you said, like for simple, you know, like sanity check stuff, you know, it's not like not something incredibly in-depth that, oh, I have to do my own custom model for this thing and I need to, you know, evaluate how it absolutely works over, you know, like, no, not really.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time I've done that, actually. So, yeah.
I think it might have been my Keyfly days when I was doing that stuff. I mean, like, I guess I did it a little bit.
Yeah.
And my one or two of my
I wouldn't have touched that. I didn't use it at Altium. So, yeah, like, Sercel would have been the last time. Yeah. So we're talking, like, 20 years ago, probably.
Right. I went back and listened. So we've had Mike on the show, and I'll link that in, too. It's a good interview. I mean, like, Mike does not Mike comes across as incredibly skilled. Like, he knows things about Splice that Dave and I would just never even come close on. But he doesn't come across as particularly, you know, he seems like he knows what he's doing and how he wants to do things, and it's not going to, he's not going to be using a JavaScript front end anytime soon. How about that?
Right. Okay. Yeah.
But one of the things I said in that show is that, like, one of the values, at least when it was LT Spice and like the LT Spice days, is that they had bespoke parts and like guaranteed models that were
tied to the specific
parts. And like that was super valuable to me. And that it
especially
actually even,
there are switches and stuff like switcher, that. I would use it for LT Spice for LT switches. And they had all their models. Yeah. Yeah.
Like you said, a sanity check.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, it's supposed to have like this kind of rise time. It's supposed to do this, but it was also verified by LT. Like, so like now if Corvo's doing the same thing, that might make sense. I don't need that kind of level of things. But if it enables me to, like, if it reliably allows me to, like, evaluate a part without having to have it on my bench, or even if I do have it on my bench, I can then go and reference this thing to be like, here's the expected behavior, here's the weird shit I'm seeing on my bench. Like, that's super valuable, and every chip company should have that, but they don't.
That's probably a smart move. So they've hired, work for him now? So they've hired him.
I don't know the relationship. Yep. I'm guessing they're probably paying him in some way.
I don't think it matters. Yeah. But anyway, there's a demo. There's a video of him talking about it on their website, on their QSPICE simulator page. Yep. So that's a smart move.
Oh, definitely agree with that. Yeah.
Awesome.
You know what would not be a smart move is hiring your eye to build a SPICE engine. That would be a dumb move.
No. Yeah. That would be a really dumb move.
Dumb.
Because we don't know Jack about it. Exactly.
All right, man. Well, we'll be back in a week or two talking about other things we don't know Jack about.
Exactly. That's what we do.
That's what we do.
Catch you next time.